This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
My name is Evan Evagora. I play Elnor on Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to The Line on Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Justin Ozer, and join with me today are my co-hosts, Chrissy DeClercq-Szilagyi and Brandon Shea Matala. Chrissy, how are you doing today?
I am doing quite well. Weather's starting to get warm, so even though we're stuck in the house, we can wander around into the backyard, which is nice. So
that is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Brandon, how you doing?
I gotta tell you guys, you know, I have to be absolutely candid with you guys. candid with you and tell you just how excited I am right now.
Good. I'm glad. Okay, so today on The Line, listeners, we have a special guest. It's Evan Evagora, who plays Elnor on Star Trek Picard. So, Evan, thank you for joining us today.
No, thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. So, let's get started by asking the question, how did your career in acting start?
My career in acting has a very funny story. So I finished high school, wasn't really sure of what I wanted to do. I always had this kind of connection to film and television. So I went to film school, subsequently dropped out, I think a year and a half after. And then I was scouted for modeling, funnily enough. And then it turns out my agent had an acting agency as well, and then encouraged me to audition. So I spent about a year or maybe 2 years just working on my craft. And then I started getting auditions. The first role I landed was a small, very, very small role in this obscure TV show no one even in Australia has probably heard of. And then I landed Fantasy Island, and then after that, Star Trek. So that's pretty much the journey of me acting.
You got to tell us what that show is. What's the show?
Yeah.
It's called Secret City. To be honest, I haven't even seen any episodes, and I don't even know what the show's about. All I know is it's based in Australia, and it's got and the scene I was involved in was at some like private education school, kind of like a, you know, like an all boys school.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, we'll have to see. We do have listeners in Australia, so maybe someone's heard of it who's listening.
You never know. I might have, I might have just jogged their memories, and they've got this really weird mental image of Elnor at a school.
Getting into Harry Potter territory there, maybe.
Yeah. We'll combine the franchises somehow.
Yeah, and bring in Tolkien, too. It's all good. Yeah.
I got a bit of a tangential question before we get on to discussing some things here. So I'm a man with some kids, you know, some young girls my age. I got to ask you, who's your favorite Wiggle?
Oh, that's a really good. So I'm of the old school original Wiggles, and I'd have to say Anthony. Anthony or Greg, the original yellow Wiggle, because he's just the most fun guy ever.
Awesome. Yeah, we saw the Wiggles live here with my kids. They love them, and it's a great show for young kids. So I know they come from Australia.
young and old.
Yes.
For sure.
Fruit salad, yummy, yummy.
Yeah, yummy. Yes. Hot potato.
I'm glad I know about this from my niece and nephew. So completely off kilter.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, so what have been your favorite moments in working on Picard?
Oh, that's actually some real. So I'd have to say any scene that I did with Jeri Ryan is up there with memorable, only because for some reason her and I during outtakes would just make each other laugh. It wouldn't even be funny what we were saying, but half the time we'd just be cracking up. And then also anything with Patrick. Anytime I got to act across from him, I just think my acting was 1,000 times better. I was more focused, but at the same time, more distracted too. There were a lot of scenes where I'd be sitting there and everyone would just stare at me because I'd be forgetting my lines because I was just, so absorbed and immersed in Patrick's acting or Alison Till's acting. I'd just forget that I was, that I had a job to do.
Yes, I can understand that.
Almost like you were watching him on the screen or something, right?
Yeah, exactly like that. And then there was a lot of times where I'd be like, oh, am I meant to speak? And they'd be like, yeah, it's your turn. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. They just found it funny, though.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So we got a question from our listeners group from Michael Bentley. He says, were you aware of how different Elnor and the Kuat Malat were from the Romulan character types that were depicted on previous Star Treks?
Initially, no. During my audition, I got, I wasn't even aware that he was a Romulan. I got told, that he's a very, very emotional. And I got told, I think the character description just said similar to a Vulcan.
Okay.
And then after I got the role, obviously I got sent more of a character description and a breakdown. And then I realized he's a Romulan and I was like, oh, okay. Like I know about Romulans. Mm-hmm. And then I got given the script and it was just the complete opposite, idea to what I had of Romulans or like a complete different understanding. I kind of found it similar to how Michael Dorn probably would have found playing Worf. Oh. Klingons being viewed as this like, warrior kind of like race that's sort of an enemy to the Federation. I just kind of ran with it like that. So I kind of jumped at the opportunity because thanks to, my character, we get to see a different aspect of Romulan culture, a completely different side that we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think from your answer and from what I've heard, you were pretty familiar with Star Trek before you landed the role, right?
Yeah, pretty familiar. And I was lucky they sent us like a rundown of episodes to kind of like jog our memories on Trek or to fill in information for the Picard series. But I just found myself kind of watching. I think I watched about half of them, and I'm like, I'm just going to go back and watch all my favorite episodes. So I started, I think, on iBorg. And then I just moved to like Tapestry and then just kind of watched whatever I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Yeah.
So question about the Kuat Malat themselves, like how do you feel that this absolute candor, the philosophy that they have, how do you feel that like impacted your character and what did you do to portray that on screen? Cause it's something we've never heard of before for the Romulans.
No, not at all. To be honest, I watched a lot of like samurai kind of kung fu movies, where they've kind of got that lone wanderer, silent, strong figure kind of type. That really helped. But also in terms of like the absolute candor, my character had a lot of, you've seen the series, he has a lot of humorous moments. Mm-hmm. So it was about trying to find ways of working that in, like working the humor with the absolute candor. If I'd done any of Elnor's like jokes or humor or amusing moments, I think if I had played for funny instead of played for serious, it just wouldn't have come off as genuine. I don't think the audience would have resonated with Elnor as much.
So we have another question from our listeners group, the Babel Conference. This is from Nicholas Paul Collinson, who is a listener in Australia. And he says, how did it feel being able to keep your natural accent to play a character from a completely different world? And then he says, from a fellow Melburnian, what's your favorite place to go on a weekend around Melbourne? Did you ever try to mess with your American co-stars about Australian stereotypes?
I actually did try to mess with not just my co-stars, but a lot of the cast and crew as well. I said that I used to ride kangaroos. I used to say a lot of just like ridiculous stuff, drop bears. So I made up a story about koala bears and how they're actually like quite vicious. And, if they'll drop out of trees and attack you. I'm trying to think of some. It was, you know, it was mainly just a breakdown of communication a lot of the time on set. Australian accents can be a bit hard to understand sometimes, so I just like really play up my Aussie accent and make up kind of like slang words and see if anyone would notice. And they all just took it as if it was, you know, like something real. Like, oh, you know, Ridgey Didge must be a real, like a real word. Otherwise, why would he be saying it? And then, yeah, so it was actually Jonathan Frakes who suggested I keep my accent. And I'll actually be forever grateful for him because now we've got an Aussie, like a beautiful Aussie accent in the world of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have it any other way now.
Yeah, that's great. And we really do appreciate that because I always like seeing whenever an actor can kind of keep their natural accent. So, yeah.
This is from one of our listeners on Twitter, at Lizbar, and they are a listener from Melbourne. They say, parenthetically, he'll understand what this means, I promise. Who does Evan barrack for?
Yep. So the team that I barrack for is actually the most hated team in my league. They're called the Collingwood Magpies. And in my opinion, they're the greatest team to ever walk the face of the earth. But aww, every other person will disagree with you.
Interesting. We'll have to see from the person who asked on Twitter what they think. Maybe they agree with you.
They sound like a Sydney supporter, so they'd probably agree with me.
So what kind of sport is this then?
So it's called Australian Rules Football. To be honest, the best I can kind of describe it is you've got people who can jump like basketball players, run like NFL players, and it's somehow all of those sports, including like soccer, combined, and that's how you get Aussie rules. And you kick the ball between four like sticks. Mm-hmm. On each side of a field. It's a really weird game, like when you explain it, but when you see it, it's kind of easy to follow and comprehend.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I highly recommend you check out an Aussie Rules football game if you have the time during this crisis. Anyone listening, Australian Rules, Collingwood Magpies, check it out.
All right. Check it out.
Now, our previous question, there was two examples that he gave when he was asking about the Australian stereotypes that I'd like clarification on. What is knifey spoony and dollary doos?
Have you ever seen that episode of the Simpsons that go to Australia?
Beer? Coffee? Yeah,
exactly. Beer. Yeah. So do you remember the whole in Crocodile Dundee movie, that's not a knife, this is a knife?
Uh-huh. Yep. Uh-huh.
So that famous line, they used it in The Simpsons. They had this Crocodile Dundee character approach Bart and Lisa, and he whips out a spoon and he says, that's not a knife, this is a knife. And for some reason, Lisa just goes, that's a spoon. And he goes, I see you've played knifey spoony before. And then dollary doos.
Remember that.
Dollary doos is what we call money. In my opinion, I actually think we should officially change it to dollary doos instead of the Australian dollar. I think dollary doos just has a better kind of ring to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent. I like it.
Yeah.
I love it. Are there any special memories that you have from the set of working with Patrick or Jerry that you'd like to share with us or anybody else on the show that you work with? Anything that really stands out for you?
So the Queen for a Day, we were calling it the Queen for a Day. So when Jerry becomes the Borg Queen, mm-hmm. We were shooting, I think I had just shot with Pat. We shot two scenes. So we shot the scene where Issa, Patch, and Patrick leave. And I'm left with Jonathan Del Arco, Hugh the Borg, with the whole please my friends choose to live and the cube slides up. And then right after that, Jerry and I had to film our scene in the Borg cube in the Queen cell. And it was 11 p.m. at night and we had the last shot of the day. And because we had been laughing and joking around all day, we couldn't do this scene seriously, like no matter how much we tried. So that was that memory for me sticks out, laughing all night with Jerry Ryan in a ball cube. Aww. That's probably one of the highlights of my of season 1-2 for me.
Awesome. That's excellent. That question came from Jim Stoffel in our group, in our Babel conference group.
Good question.
If they recorded you guys laughing all night, I would just watch that.
I hope they do. There's a scene they had to do both of our close ups, and I step into frame, like into the camera, and every time I took a step into shot, Jerry would just laugh, and then I'd have to step back, and then when it was her turn of me, and it showed my face, every time I stepped in, I'd laugh because she'd have a big, you'd see the back of Jerry's head from the camera and it's just me. Like, I just see her face like smiling and then it'd just make me crack. And then we'd have to go back to, you know, back to the start and shoot again. And then, yeah, but it was fun. It was a fun night.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I do hope they have like an outtake reel or something like that from the first season.
Oh, there are some really good outtakes I hope I get to see. And that you all get to see, actually. I hope everyone gets to see these. There are some gems.
All right.
Nice. So we covered this a bit before, but I'm curious to go into it in more detail. So we have another question from our listener group from Ben Greet, saying the character of Elnor seems to draw on plenty of cinematic samurai tropes. Did you watch or read anything about samurai culture to prepare for the role, or did you focus purely on the script for Elnor's characterization? Now, I think you said you did watch some things, but you know, if you wanted to talk about that or anything specific related to that you did to prepare for the role?
I mean, Forbidden Kingdom, I'd say is a movie that I watched before, as well as Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Enter the Samurai. And I actually watched a few of the Wu-Tang Clan samurai movies that they've produced. So there was a bit, but yeah, it mainly became the focus was on the character and the development of the character and kind of getting into his mindset and understanding him. I'd say that was the out of the two, that was the more important thing.
Okay, that makes sense.
All right, so in talking about Elnor, we have a question from a listener at Olga Karshenko 5 on Twitter. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that. They ask, if you were free to add an on-screen scene to reveal more of Elnor's character, what would it be?
Ooh. You mean a scene that was removed or a scene that I could add?
Your choice.
Yeah, your call. They don't specify.
Oh, if it was a scene I'd like to create, I'd probably just like to see either Elnor first coming to Vashti and entering under the co-op lab, like his very first day there, or some background into what happened to his parents.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And his, like, you know, his upbringing, like just a little bit more into his background.
I think both of those would be great. Although I think the thing that I've seen most from listeners is they wanted one scene for you with Spot 2.
With a certain cat. Yeah, I keep getting asked that. That actually didn't make the... So there was a scene written in where Spot 2 and myself or Elnor get to finally meet. But, you know, given time restraints and, you know, things need to be edited and a lot of things make the cutting room floor. So, unfortunately, our meeting didn't make the cut. But hopefully, you know, season 2, Elnor gets to see a cat. I know Picard promised he'd get to see one. He's yet to deliver on it, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'd love to see that. Although there is a question, like if Picard made a promise, does that carry over since Picard is an android now?
a promise is a prison, Justin. Mm-hmm.
Promise is a prison, exactly, Justin.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
So in addition to that question, as an actor, was there anything that you added to the character of Elnor that wasn't written down? It's something that Evan brought to the role. Maybe something that you had in your mind for something that happened to Elnor in his youth or just some backstory that you gave the character to help you act that role.
I grew up in a household, not full of, you know, all female warrior nuns, but yeah, with a lot of sisters, like a lot of sisters. I'm the youngest as well. So the connections with Elnor and myself are kind of, it was almost effortless. He's just, you know, left his home planet of Vashti, and he's explored, you know, the universe, and, you know, he's got no idea what he's preparing for. I felt the same thing when I hopped on a plane and moved over to Los Angeles to film. You know, I've never been to America. You know, I was experiencing all these new things for the first time. So that was kind of easy. I'd say the things that I sort of added would be like it's more just like what goes on internally and just kind of filling the blanks of his own story. That's so there are things I know about Eleanor that probably no one else knows, and it's probably because I've made them up. But in my mind, everything that I think about Eleanor, everything that I think as Eleanor is canon. But yeah, mannerisms and stuff. I mean, like, if you really go back and you watch him and how he like stands on the ship or like leans against things, that's very much a me sort of thing. Like I lean and like stand exactly like that when I have to stand up somewhere for hours. So that's just kind of like translated into the show. Sit like it's called like an Evan Lean, I guess. You'll notice it if you rewatch.
I'll definitely look for the Evan Lean on a rewatch.
Yes.
So Evan, actually, there was something that you said that I'm curious to explore. So when you were going to LA to film Star Trek Picard, so that was your first time in the US, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, first time. So I shot a movie previously with Sony and Blumhouse, but it was an American production, but it shot in Fiji. So I didn't end up going. I'd never been to America before. I've been to Europe. I've been to Asia. I've been to more. I live in Australia, New Zealand, some, you know, tropical islands where my family originate from. But yeah, I'd never stepped foot in the States. And next thing you know, I was living there.
Yeah, it must be amazing. I'm just kind of curious, like having that experience, because I mean, I think that, you know, maybe there's a certain impression you might have about what it's like being in the US, and like, was there anything that was kind of surprising when you were in the US living there and shooting the show of like being in the United States?
I think just how like the scale of everything, especially in Los Angeles, like the freeways and highways and like the amount of cars on the road, I didn't quite realize. Because you hear, you know, people say LA is a big city or New York is a big city, but I had nothing really to compare it to. But they are like super, super cities, like full of people. I could probably spend the rest of my life living in Los Angeles and never meet everyone who lives there, you know?
For sure.
Yeah. Yes. So it's just like one of like those things. Oh, and your fast food's better because you've got way more things. Taco Bell only just came into Australia. And I think we've got like three stores, and I'm lucky enough to have one around the corner from where I'm staying.
Yeah, it is definitely surreal going to the United States. Like, I'm from Canada, and that's where I'm living right now. I'm in a city called Regina, Saskatchewan, and the United States has 10 times the population of Canada. And, you know, so we've got 35 million, they've got about 350 million. So when I go down to the States for vacation, on any given day, there's 10 times the amount of people walking around, uh-huh. You know, and it's like, it's really surreal seeing that many people out and about. And I don't know how many people live in Australia. I don't know if you know that, but yeah, it's definitely weird.
Yeah. It's like almost over, like I don't realize how many people there are on this like earth until I go to a big city like that and witness mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
So you're always just in this kind of bubble. And then once that, I think getting out of that bubble is a good thing. I recommend everyone does it, you know, explore a bit.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing because, you know, you got the experience of a certain slice of the U.S., of L.A., and maybe, Brandon, you've been to more crowded places. But I've lived in a lot of different areas, including rural, less populated areas. Some years ago, my wife and I lived in a county in Washington that had basically like 3,000 people in it. So, which was a totally, totally different experience than living in, you know, LA or San Francisco or something like that, which I've done before. So it's like you can get a certain impression, but there's actually a lot of other things that are going on in a lot of different communities and in the country as well. So
yeah, well, that's something I still want to experience, you know, that kind of like slice of Americana where it's, you know, just neighborhoods and, you know, kids riding bikes and stuff. I haven't been fortunate enough to be able to visit any like towns or suburbs like that yet. But yeah, you know, like small, tiny communities. I really, yeah, just want to experience that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe season two of Star Trek Picard will take place on, you know, a suburb on an alien planet or something.
Yeah,
that would be weird.
Excellent. So Lila Phillips in the Babel Conference asks, what kind of training did you have for fighting and swordplay? And also, her son wants to cosplay as you. Are there any tips you can give for the costume or the hair? And they love you very much.
Oh, that first off, very, very kind words. I'm actually blushing right now. with the cosplay, I would say just make sure that he can breathe and he doesn't get too hot in the outfit. That was the biggest... But we were shooting in summer, but my outfit was not breathable. So we had to have like these built-in pockets for ice packs all around my my suit. So that's probably what I recommend. And what was the other half of the question? Sorry.
What kind of training did you have for swordplay and fighting?
Oh, the sword. So I had zero experience in in even using a sword, except, you know, when I used to dress up when I was younger and pretend I was like a Ninja Turtle or like Legolas or something, or Aragorn. So it was pretty much the first day I landed. It was the first day I met Patrick Stewart. I went to set, met Patrick, embarrassed myself a little bit. He asked me, he said, hi, my name's Patrick. And I said, yep, good, thanks. Because I thought he said, hi, how are you? So, and then I went and met my stunt double. His name's Anise. He's actually, you see him in, I think it's either the first or second episode. I think it's the first episode when Darge is killed. He's the one who kills her.
Oh, okay. Really?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. So he's my stunt double. Anytime you see Eleanor like doing the coolest stuff, like flipping off a wall, that's him. Every other stunt is me. But anything like dangerous or complicated or where I have to look, you know, like super cool, I leave it to him because he's more than capable of being able to do that. But he trained me pretty much my first day on set. We started doing all these sword training drills, you know, how to hold it properly, right defensive maneuvers, even like where to place your hand when it's not on the sword. Because for some reason, I just like to stick my arm out in the air for no reason, and it just looks weird. That was my biggest problem. My arm would just go straight up if it wasn't on the sword. But yeah, it was good fun, and I think we did a really good job, judging from all the fight scenes and stuff that I've seen. So it was good training, and hopefully season two we get to do, you know, more elaborate and more cooler things.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exciting. So I'm just curious, when you say, you know, the stunt double does the things that are, you know, more complicated or flipping off walls or whatever, but there are other stunts that you're doing, like what are the kinds of stunts that you would do?
So a perfect example is, you know, when Seven appears on the cube, mm-hmm. To save me. So that entire fight sequence of me and those Tal Shiar agents where I'm fighting them, every bit up until the moment I'm slammed against the Borg cube and I run along the wall and flip and get flipped over is me. So they'd cut the scene and then they'd bring Anise in and he did the flip. Or the scene where Nerissa is shooting at Eleanor in the Borg cube while Hugh hides, that's all Anise up until the point where it's Nerissa and I fighting. So he would fill in on the stuff that, you know, is like pretty complicated in a confined space. But yeah, he smashed it. He knocked it out of the park and he made me look like some badass spider monkey.
Evan, I don't know if you know how sad you've just made me with one of the things you've said, because you've now, being a member of the production, you've now confirmed that your stunt double played a character who killed Dodge. And I've been holding out hope that Dodge has actually been alive, and it's been kind of a thing through all of our podcasts. I keep saying, you know what, I'm starting to think she might be dead. So, but I've been holding out hope, and you've just crushed my hope.
Well, I mean, you never know. Season two, like, I don't know, but I know that in that scene she died. She could come back. I can neither confirm or deny.
Okay, all right. Maybe. So you can keep up that hope, Brandon.
Yeah. Oh, thank goodness.
You're alive, you know.
Yeah, it's been a joke we've had, Evan, like, for all of the episodes where Brandon was holding out hope that she was alive.
Well, we always try and predict the twists, right? And so, like, right in episode one, I'm like, there's no way Daj is dead, right? And then I kept expecting her to come back, and then every episode, I'm like, I'm starting to think she's actually dead.
Well, so. you and my sister were of the same theory. Like, that was the whole thing up until I think episode 9, and then after episode 9 aired, I get a phone call from her just being like, it's lore, isn't it? I was like, what are you talking about? And she's just like, it's lore. And then I was trying to figure, I'm like, are you talking about Dr. Sung? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh. And then I just hung up the phone on her. But yeah, up until the end of episode 10, she was like, it's lore, it's lore. I know it's lore. Like, I know the plot twist. I know. And I called her afterwards. I'm like, well, you were wrong.
A lot of people thought that. There was a lot of people looking for lore. Looking for lore in all the wrong places.
I like that. I might say that.
Well, you know, he must be out there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe. Well, we never know. Season 2 or who knows? Hopefully, you know, I'd like to see. There are a lot of characters that I would love to see reappear in the show. And hopefully... I know Patrick and probably everyone else, you know, has characters they want to see, but hopefully it's just all of mine that I want to see that gets chosen.
Well, you have to tell us what, let's say, your top three are that you'd like to see.
Yeah.
Whoopi, of course, Guinan, Q. And to be honest, I would love to, I'd love to see Will Wheaton return to the show.
Nice.
And probably Worf, though. I'd like to see a little scene between Elnor and Worf.
Okay. Ooh.
That'd be interesting.
That would be cool.
It's like a little sparring kind of like he's teaching me, you know. Just I think that'd be fun. I think that'd be a fun scene to film.
That'd be really cool.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe like a little fighting practice that they have, Worf with a batleth and you with your sword.
it'd make interesting TV. I think fans would lose their minds. I know I'd lose my mind.
So. Yeah. So we do have another listener question. This one's from Mark Keller, who says, Elnor is a great character because he has a strong kick-ass side and a sweet, innocent side. For example, when he confronts evildoers and when, on the other hand, he rushed and gave Seven a huge hug. I would like to ask Evan if it was difficult to play a character with such diverse sides.
Not really. I kind of would. I just viewed him as the one character. It's almost like, you know, a kid is always sweet and innocent until you get them upset. And then... once you get them upset, it takes, you know, it's hard to calm them down. So I always viewed Elnor with this childlike innocence and a kind of a childlike almost understanding of the world. Well, childlike's wrong, a sheltered understanding of the world. There was no real issues. And you know, teenagers get angry all the time, like young men especially, like, you know, don't fly off the handle, but, you know, aren't necessarily mature enough or in control of their emotions enough. So no, it was almost like playing just me a couple of years ago when I was, you know, like lost, confused, and, you know, still trying to figure out what I wanted to do with life. So it was just about like going back to that period of time.
Oh, that's interesting. And maybe that's a good way to look at it. Elnor is a bit like a teenager that you just don't want to get them upset because they'll be really angry.
Yeah, exactly. He just knows how to use a sword.
Yeah, exactly. Oh.
Another one of our listeners in the Babel Conference, Karen Chuplis, asked, the hint that Elnor now has two mothers on board La Serena, that would be Raffi and Seven, is that a deliberate choice or simply evolved organically through the cast chemistry?
I think that just simply evolved through the cast chemistry, especially with Michelle and myself. Like, I love Michelle to bits. She's probably the one of the go-to people in when I'm in America to talk to and to connect with. But I think in that, especially in that moment with Raffi and Elnor after Picard's death, I feel like they both get something, like both benefit in a way off of grieving with one another. I mean, she's earlier on in the season, her son abandoned her. Here's Elnor with no parents. It kind of makes sense that they would be drawn to one another. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the relationship with Elnor and Seven, I mean, it's just as close, but it's still a very different dynamic. I'd say that he's almost got like a crush on Seven, or looks up to Seven as this badass Fenris Ranger who, you know, just does all the things that kind of he dreams about doing. So I think she's kind of like a big mentor to him.
Okay.
But yeah, 2 months is great.
Yeah, and we love we love Jerry Ryan as Seven, but we also love Michelle Hurd as Raffi, definitely a favorite character for us.
Yeah, one of mine too. I loved it. Her entrance in the show, I think, is probably my favorite. Well, second to mine.
Of course.
Of course, yeah.
So, Evan, I've heard that you interact with some fans on the Facebook groups. Is this true?
I do.
What's wrong with you?
I do interact with the fans. I don't know. It's just nice seeing all the memes, all the debate and all the talk, whether it's good or whether it's bad. I feel like it's the best way that I can gauge not only how well the show's doing, but also how well the cast is being received. So it's just kind of comforting. And also it's just entertainment. It's just hours and hours of entertainment being able to scroll through the thing. And also some of the fan theories that I have read are just so out there. It just makes me think, like, how did they even, you know, like dream this stuff up, you know? So it's just interesting seeing how close some of the fans are to actually getting it right.
So how do you differentiate, and how do you go into something? Because there's a lot of negative fandom out there, you know, and like there's a lot of like vile things that people say. Like, how do you as an actor go into one of those groups and not let those kinds of things bother you?
To be honest, it's been really hard, especially with some of the comments are just like outright bullying and mean. It is very hard, but then reading a comment like that, you see everyone else jump to the defense or come to the aid of the people that those people are trying to tear down. And that's what keeps me in the groups. So it's just the vast minority of people in those groups that, you know, spread hate and negativity. The rest of them, like the rest of the group is nothing but like lovely and caring and funny. So that's kind of the stuff I focus on when I'm in those groups. And if I need a break, I always just leave the group or like mute the group and then, you know, come back to it when I'm ready.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I like that perspective because I found that as well. I mean, I participate in a lot of groups and on Twitter and all that, but, and there is some negativity, but there's a lot of positivity and love. So I like seeing that as well.
Even growing up, like Trek wasn't considered, you know, like the coolest thing to be a part of, or Star Trek wasn't considered to be the coolest, you know, thing to watch. But here's this whole community that's been created, this like whole family. It like supersedes normal, I'd say like normal fandom. It's really like a family, and everyone like is united and like loves Trek. I think that's the thing that attracts most people to it. So like a few bad apples shouldn't ruin it, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And of course, I'm assuming you're doing all of this under an assumed name and people don't know that it's you, right?
Yeah, it's a pseudonym from an obscure television show that I like. I'm not going to say anything else. Cause
oh, yeah, don't.
Is it that obscure Australian one that you're part of?
No, it's not. I wish it was Secret City. To be honest, I don't even remember my character's name in Secret City. It was that early. It was that like that short, like small of a role. I think I was a school kid.
Mm-hmm.
John, I think my name was, maybe my last name was Johnson. Anyway, not a big deal, but no, it's a different television show, but it's got like quite a large cult following.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, I think that's pretty interesting that you're kind of watching some of these groups, because I haven't heard of any other actors actually saying that they do that. So I think it's very fascinating for us.
Yeah.
It's a challenge for me. Like I'll confess. So I'm the nitpicker of this group when it comes to our podcast and whatnot. I'm usually the one that's nitpicking the episodes the most. Right. And I love the show. I really do enjoy it, but I do nitpick it pretty hard. And I do get a lot of pushback from fandom responding with, you know, you know, let it go, just enjoy the show. And I find that I have to mute myself and like not interact with those conversations as well, because it is hard, because there are so many people who do love the show so much and they don't necessarily want to hear that type of nitpicking when it comes to the show that they love so much. But for me, it's an important part of my fandom. So
yeah, I understand that. But that's also that type of debate. I welcome that. I mean, that's another thing that's great about all the fans, is that they're able to, you know, talk about their theories, their ideas, and Star Trek means different things to so many different people. So if you're all for nitpicking and everything, I say go for it. It's just when it turns into, if and when it turns into, you know, something else, that's when it's bad.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I agree with that 100%. Like if I post something and somebody comes back with something super negative, I don't even respond. I'm like, 'cause that's not even the fandom that I want to get involved in. When people are just outright spewing hatred, that's not good stuff. So
yeah, exactly. It's just not necessary, and it's not welcome.
Mm-hmm. All right. So have you attended any conventions?
I was lucky enough. We obviously San Diego Comic Con, and
of
then
course,
we did
yeah.
a, little,
that's right.
a yep. little press tour of Italy Comic Con. And
ooh, what was that like?
Paris Comic Con.
I'm curious about going to these yeah. European conventions.
Patrick read Shakespeare in this beautiful old Italian opera theater.
Oh, how wonderful.
Wow.
We had just done our interviews and he got up and he just said, he had to in this theater. It was the only way to really give it any justice. So he performed Shakespeare, and I think the people who was part of our team who was helping us during Comic-Con, he just like started crying,
yeah.
just burst into tears. But the only time I've gotten to meet fans has been, I did a Chicago convention, I think just before Corona broke out, just before all this COVID stuff shut down everything. So I got to meet a few of the fans and do like a little Q&A. That was actually so much fun. And I think only two of my episodes had been out. So just the support that I got, even just, you know, having had two episodes was just amazing. I thought two people would come and visit me. And I was pretty busy most of the day, like meeting people and just, you know, getting to talk to them, listening to, you know, which Trek they grew up watching and who their favorite character is and what they like about this, the season, and also their fan theories. And it was a fun 3 days. And I got to see Chicago and snow. I've never seen snow in my life, and Chicago.
Oh.
So although everyone was like, this isn't really snow. Snow's not meant to be brown.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's better than no snow.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful that you got to do that. And hopefully when all this Corona stuff passes, you can do more conventions and talk with people.
I think we're trying to work out a way to turn conventions into just to do it online, almost like a virtual like convention sort of room. I'm not sure. There was talks about that, because I just want to meet the fans, you know. That's
yeah.
You got, you know, the fans are the only reason why the show is still goes on, and it's great to already have such a, you know, staunch and dedicated fan base. It's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we hear stories sometimes of actors getting involved in Star Trek and maybe they don't maybe know what to anticipate, but did you feel like you were prepared for, okay, I'm going to be part of a Star Trek show. People are going to talk about this intensely and probably for the rest of my life, you know, were you kind of prepared for that mindset?
I tried to be, I thought I did, going into filming, and then I sat down with Jonathan and he was just like, you don't understand like your life will change. And then after speaking to Sinequa, Martin Green from Discovery, she said the same thing. She's like, the fans are so generous, you know, they're fans for life. They'll follow your career, you know, throughout your entire life. And then it didn't really hit until I walked out in San Diego to a room of thousands cheering my name, that I realized, wow, this is actually, they were all right. I'm not prepared for this. But I mean, after that initial sort of response and everything, you just get used to it. And like my day-to-day life hasn't really changed. Even when I've been out, like I was out for Jonathan Dalarco's birthday and we were out and someone stopped him while I was next to him and said, "Oh, Hugh the Borg, like I really loved you on last week's episode." And John and Hugh had just died as well. And they were like, you know, "Oh, I've signed this petition that's online. Like we don't want Hugh to die." And then Jonathan pointed to me and said, "Do you recognize this guy?" And the guy just turned to me and said, "No, sorry, I don't."
Oh, no.
No,
but I kind of like that, because even though I'm part of this show and my character's face is pretty noticeable, me out of the makeup, I can go a bit unrecognized. And I like that. I've still got a bit of anonymity.
They were looking for the slanted eyebrows and they didn't see that, and they were like, "Who are you?"
No slanted eyebrows and no long hair. I think it's right. No sword probably threw them off.
Right.
I should just walk around with that, and then they'll be like, "Oh, Elnor, yeah, big fan."
Yeah.
Well, you've already mentioned them, but as we kind of wrap up near the end of our interview here, do you want to tell us a little bit about your experience working on Fantasy Island? I know we touched on it earlier, but maybe tell listeners where they can find that and just maybe something memorable that happened on set in Fiji, I think you said it was?
Yeah, Fiji. So it's a Sony Blumhouse, kind of like their summer horror movie. I play a character named Nick Taylor, and I am not... The story behind my character is everyone is somehow involved in my character's passing. And then all of a sudden, my character starts appearing all throughout these main characters' sort of fantasies. And the fantasies don't play out how you'd expect. We shot that in Fiji. It was like so much fun. I'd say the highlight of that was we were filming on this beautiful island, like absolute paradise, and we were like staying on this kind of cruise ship, and I just got to snorkel every day that I wasn't filming. I got to see sea turtles. I went parasailing.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was hardly work, I'd say, but that I think that's due to be released digitally and online, I think, later this year. So it premiered on Valentine's Day, and yeah, so it was a fun ride. But not as fun as Star Trek.
Did you film that before or after Star Trek?
I filmed it before, and it came out after, which is funny. So whenever someone says, you know, like, "What's the first, what other work have you done?" I tell them Fantasy Island. They were asking, you know, "Has it come out yet? When does it come out?" And you know, it was after Star Trek. So it was pretty, I had a pretty good month. My first episode aired the same day that Fantasy Island premiered.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah, so it was a fun day for me.
That's very cool. So another question. So tell us, what do you like to do outside of acting? Are there hobbies or interests that you have that you haven't already talked about?
At the moment, during this, because I've been in self-isolation for, I think, 2 weeks now, I've bought a bunch of Nintendo Switch games. So I've been playing Civilization VI a lot. But I just keep restarting because I don't know why. I don't know which leader I want. Sometimes I'm Alexander the Great. Other times I choose to be Australia. I'm just, all over the place with that. But I've been also reading The Magician series by Raymond D. Feist. So I've gotten back into that. It's an old sort of fantasy series. He wrote it. It was inspired by his Dungeons and Dragons games that he used to play with his friends. So yeah, it's a very good read. I recommend it to anyone who enjoys fantasy.
Mm-hmm. That's a classic.
That's very cool. Actually, I'm kind of curious, since you're talking about reading something like that. There is a part for a little bit for Elnor as a young child in the Picard novel, Last Best Hope. I'm curious if you've read that novel, or if you know you intend to, or anything like that.
I do intend to. I've also got to get a copy off of Michelle Hurd for her comic as well, her graphic novel of Ruck and Picard as well. Yeah, I plan on reading like all of that. It's just a matter of leaving the house and doing it. But it's like a big list. Like I'm still yet to read Michael Chabon's Clan Cavalier. That's like number two on my list, I think, at the moment. So once I get through this, that's what I'll be starting on.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, very cool. Yeah. Okay. So I think you've told us about kind of some of your current or upcoming work. Is there anything else upcoming that you'd like to let our listeners know about?
I do have a couple of things in the works. Like there's this video game I'm working on, but
video game.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's called The Quarry. It is a horror-based video game. And it's involving like, I don't want to say too much, but it's involving like werewolves and, you know, kind of like there's a lot of like supernatural elements to it. And it's very much the choices and actions that you do during the game will, it'll be a different outcome every time, like a different ending that depicts the ending. So it's a really good game. We're set to shoot that, I think, August maybe, depending on how everything goes. But yeah, that's the upcoming work I have.
Cool. Oh, that's very, very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's a really cool project to be attached to. And I may or may not get turned into a werewolf depending on how you play. So
that's great.
So fingers crossed.
There should be. Excellent.
Yeah, don't get me bit, anyone who's gonna play The Quarry. Please.
Yeah.
Don't let me
get bit. And you definitely need to request that they shoot a little something that'll be like a secret thing you can find in the game that can turn you into Elnor.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, like a patch in the game or something. I didn't even think. Maybe if I get bit instead of turning into a werewolf, I'll turn into a Romulan every full moon.
Nice.
I would love to see that. So Evan, it's been wonderful talking with you today. Tell listeners where they can find you online if they wanted to interact with you. Now, I'm not asking you to reveal your secret Facebook identity. It can just be whatever public identity you have for yourself.
Well, the only social media or anything I really use is my Instagram. So it's just evan.evagora. You'll be able to find me there. If you want to do any, like, if people want any, like, shout outs or just want to chat or anything, during Corona, I started a Cameo. And, you know, I haven't even really been wishing people happy birthdays. I've just been, you know, just talking about my day. People are curious as to what I've been doing in isolation. So, yeah, I guess you can reach me there too, but mainly Instagram.
So I wanted to let you know before you go, Evan. So we'll basically take the audio, some of it from the phone call, some of it from you being on your computer, and we'll edit together as the podcast. I would say probably should be out somewhere within, you know, a week or so. So just to give you an idea, and we'll give you a heads up when it's out so you can, you know, take a listen or let people know about it.
Share it on Instagram.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My parents are already asking me. They sent me a text just before being like, have you done your interview yet? When's it out? So I can give them a
heads up.
Nice.
That's sweet.
Well, if your parents are on Facebook, tell them to join a Babel conference. And if you want to join with your secret name, we'll...
So I will say hi, Mom, and hi, Dad, like eventually at some point on something. I did in England. I think at the London premiere, I said hi, Mom, hi, Dad, and they were happy with that.
So. Oh, of course.
That's really cool.
Well, we can edit that in too at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Well, yeah, there we go. That's two for two now.
Definitely include that.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so
much. We look forward to season two. We're so excited for it.
Oh,
to
see where it goes.
We are.
Too.
Yeah.
Me too. Hopefully you enjoy it as much as you've enjoyed this season. If not more. No, you'll enjoy it more, I think. Anyway.
Thank
you so much, Justin, Brandon, Chrissy.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you so
much. Thank you so much. Stay safe.
Stay safe. You too.
Well, it's been so amazing interviewing Evan Evagora, who plays Elnor on Star Trek Picard today. But that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
Narek is a character not really working for me right now.
You don't like the sexy, sultry bad boy of the Romulan Empire?
Oh, I guess, but I don't know. Sometimes I think of, like, if he's the sultry bad boy, it's kind of like if Ross from Friends were the bad boy, like he's trying to be cool. I don't get it.
He really likes leather pants too, so.
Earl Grey.
And Data's head gets sewn back on his other body, so we have two different parts of Data now.
Okay, so by sewn on, do you mean like stitched with fabric?
Well, how else are you going to attach a head to a body?
Electromagnetic interlocking.
But then with the skin? Oh. Yeah, you know.
Primitive Culture,
a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
Asking the fans what they want is a kind of folly. They'll know it when they see it, and they'll reject it if it's crummy. Somebody said to me early on, "Well, you can't kill Spock." I said, "Sure you can kill him. The only question is whether you kill him well."
To the journey!
Something drastic like that must have happened, because that's my big question. Like, okay, why does Seven feel like she has no family? What about her Voyager family? Yeah. Where are they? Why aren't they in her life? It could be she's self-isolating. For some reason, she just kind of fell out with everyone and has been hanging out in the former neutral zone for some reason or
she's
another.
She's looking for toilet paper.
Looking for toilet paper? Do the Borg need toilet paper?
Everyone needs toilet paper.
Can you imagine what a Borg toilet would look like?
It would be green.
Yeah. Well, probably.
Yeah, you remember when they had colored toilet paper?
No.
No.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button at Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others find the show. And we have a new review, and this one made me blush a little bit when I heard it. So it's a 5-star review from Judas Booth, and it says, CBS, hire Brandon.
Now, Brandon is not making this up. Nope. It really says that,
yes,
guys. It really says that.
And it says, Brandon should be in the writer's room. His theories and story pitches are better than the episodes themselves. Love the podcast. Well, thank you so much. Our friend AJ Black, Tony Black, who's on the X-Files podcast and Primitive Culture, he said, oh, Brandon, I see you're using that nom de plume Judas Booth again, aren't you?
So. I know you couldn't have written it any better, but really, this is a real person. It is a real person, isn't it?
It's definitely not me, so. Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate it. That's some kind words. And I know some people who would definitely disagree with that statement.
All right. So it makes the world go round. Some would agree, some would disagree.
Exactly. That's more interesting.
No, that's fantastic. Thank you for listening and providing a review. And people, please provide reviews. Suggestion to say CBS hire Justin or Chrissy. No, you don't have to do that, but...
I tell you, I promise you guys, if they hire me, you guys are coming with me, okay?
All right.
And if, like me, you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and in most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard and whether or not CBS should hire Brandon. And there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
Okay, so this just kind of hit me here as we're doing this, like, end credits for our thing. Like,
yeah,
this is way too short. We got to come up with, like, another hour.
I know. Yeah. This is going to be way, way, way under 2 hours. Way, way, way under 2 hours and 38 minutes from the last one. Like,
feels
how can
weird.
We fill the time? You know what? Listeners, we have another special interview for you. It's Patrick Stewart.
Oh, no. God, I wish.
Hey, we've already had Patrick Stewart on this program. We just weren't in the room at the time. No. Duncan was, but yeah. I know. It's a lot shorter. It's weird. You're going to get some sleep tonight, Brandon.
Yes, bedtime. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the line. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter and on Instagram at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Chrissy, where can people contact you when you're not playing Knifey Spoonie?
You know, as soon as he said that was from The Simpsons, I remembered it. And I didn't know that that's... I saw that on the outline. I didn't know that's where that came from. It's wonderful. Right. So, in addition, here on the line, of course, people can find me popping at my head in the Babel Conference on occasion. And on Twitter at The Goddess Livia. That's TheGoddessLivia. You can also follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page, my fellow historian partner, and I run History with the Zilagis, and that's spelled S-Z-I-L-A-G-Y-I-S. And that's where we post about our historical research, including my blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I go episode by episode debunking the History Channel series. So, Justin, where can people contact you when you're not coming up with excellent questions to ask our interviewees?
Oh, thank you. I mean, I really just came up with a few. Our listeners came up with most of them, which is actually, that's fantastic. Thank you, listeners, for all the response on that. It was great. So, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Brandon, where can people contact you when you're not spending all hours of the night writing your pilot pitch for the next Star Trek series?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with my friends Chris and Tom. We have a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where we cover all of Hitchcock's films. And you can find me over on the United Federation of Podcast Network with my friend Zach, and we have a show called Franchise Fatigue, and on that show we cover movies, remakes, and sequels. And I'm getting close to it, so I think I'm going to put my first tease out there for the rest of the listeners.
Yes, so, please, tease.
Yeah, so I've got another podcast coming out, and it's going to be on the Nerd Party Network.
Oh.
And it's just a short run podcast series. It's not going to be long. It's a 14 episode podcast series. And it's going to be called House of Fincher. And we're covering all of David Fincher's films in chronological order leading up to his new film, Mank, which is about the writing of Citizen Kane. And I'm going to be doing that with Tristan Riddell and John Mills. And it's a lot of fun. We've got 7 episodes recorded as of this recording. So we're halfway done. And, it's been a whole heck of a lot of fun revisiting all these masterpieces, because Fincher's my favorite director, completely my favorite director. I love him.
It's wonderful.
So I'm not quite sure when that'll launch, but Mank is supposed to come out sometime this fall on Netflix. So if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/TrekFM.
And of course, we'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producer, Norman Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line. And listeners, your name can be on that list too.
Yes, $25 a month level, patreon.com/TrekFM. Mm-hmm. Said it before, but nobody's taken us up on it yet.
I know, it's weird. As soon as The Edge came out, we had like 10 people jump on as associate producers when The Edge started, and like nobody wants to join us on Picard here.
Yeah. Oh. That's okay. We'll still love your listenership.
Oh, yes.
But we'll love it even more if you become an assistant anyway. So, listeners, join us next time for another episode of The Line. We may take a little bit of a break. It may be a little while, but we will absolutely be back to be talking more Star Trek Picard.
It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life.
Please, my friends, choose to live.
Coffee? Beer? Coffee? Beer?
Is that your Australian accent?
Beer?
Okay.
Okay.